This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week's episode is brought to you by the International Brotherhood of Magicians Annual Convention 2024 in Tacoma, Washington. That's coming up on July the 10th through the 13th, and there'll be more information about that. You'll hear a little bit later on in this podcast. And also, if you always go to the convention guide on the MagicWordPodcast.com, just click on that tab, you can find out about that convention with a lot more detail, as well as several other things that are happening around the world. So that's the place to go if you're interested in learning more about magic conventions. This week also, I will announce the names of the people who have won a prize, and this will be announced on the back end of this podcast. Actually, there have been two prizes that have been or will be awarded, specifically that Dean Buchek had narrated the book called The Magical Life of Marshall Brodeen, which was written by John Mooring. And he had donated two copies of the Audible book to two lucky listeners. Let me say, two lucky subscribers. I was trying a social experiment here. Rather than announcing this contest on the podcast, I had it in the pod letter. So those who have subscribed to the pod letter and who open it and read it and look at it, then you had an opportunity to know about the contest and go to the website and enter the contest. We have been running that for the last couple of weeks. And again, I want to thank all of those who did participate. But again, there are only two winners. The names can be drawn. I also, again, want to encourage others who have not subscribed to the pod letter. That's just one of the many reasons why that you should subscribe. And also open it and take a look at that each week. See what's happening. You never know what's going to be happening here on the Magic Word Podcast. I also want to thank my guest here this week. I was in Magic Castle in Hollywood a couple of weeks ago, and I had an opportunity to sit down with a few of my friends while I was out there, and one of them is my guest here this week, Paul Green. He is the first one, I guess I would like to say, that he was green before it was politically correct. And he's been around for a while and has done a little bit of everything, and I have nothing but the greatest respect for this gentleman, and he is just one of the truly nice guys who has never said anything bad about anybody. He had received a special award of merit from the Academy of Magical Arts for all that he does each year with the blood drives that the Magic Castle sponsors, and there are so many other things that he has done within magic. And I think the tips that he gives here this week are really important, that you will learn a lot from him this week. There's a lot packed into this episode, and so I'm just going to move out of the way and let you hear from my good friend here this week. Please welcome Mr. Paul Green here on The Magic Word. I'm here today with Paul Green at the Magic Castle. And Paul has been a longtime stalwart magician, performing not only here at the Magic Castle, but also around the country. He is a known guy for not only his charitable work and all the philanthropic thing, is what a nice fellow that he is, but also as far as stage shows, he does a lot of corporate events and close-up in particular, but also trade shows. There's a lot of trade shows. And so we're going to be getting into some of that and more. But I want to introduce, first of all, Mr. Paul Green. Hey there, Paul.
Good morning, Scott.
So good to see you here this morning. It is morning at in Los Angeles, here in Hollywood, California, at the Magic Castle.
I always say good morning, no matter what time of day it is.
You never know, because it's morning somewhere, right?
It's morning somewhere. And as soon as I open my mouth, I consider it the beginning of my work day. So
and so you're always working. I like that.
I try.
You never know when it's going to end.
That's
is
right.
Is that right? How many shows have you ever worked in one day? And I'm not talking about necessarily a trade show.
I had one day many, many thousands of years ago where I did.
Back in the Jurassic era.
even before that. I did 8 shows in one day, starting at about 8 o'clock in the morning and finishing up at about 11 o'clock at night. And luckily, geographically, yeah, they were all in a straight line.
Oh, wow.
So
one right there, bing, bing, bing.
It was just one right after the other.
Now, I can imagine, like with David Kay, Silly Billy, where he's doing birthday parties. And as I understand it, when he's working like in New York City, he's got somebody who's a driver and he kind of waits for him. And then he is getting reset in the car for the next birthday party. But I'm assuming yours were probably like, what, weddings, close-up things and birthday parties too? Or?
Well,
The
first one was a breakfast meeting, so that was a corporate event.
Uh-huh.
I haven't done birthday parties in such a long time. So, most of my work is corporate and or private adult party events.
Right.
So there were a couple corporate events. And then as I remember, probably into the evening, another couple corporate cocktail type parties.
Well, the reason I was mentioning that is because I'm the same way, that I haven't done birthday parties in, I don't know, 20 years or more. But I thought when you were talking about this, this might have been back when you were doing that, because we've all done birthday parties at some point or another.
You know, Scott, I did birthday parties until I was in college.
Uh-huh.
And then I stopped doing birthday parties.
Really?
Right. And I've given that advice to a number of people as well,
mm-hmm.
that want to be professionals. And you have to make a decision as to what direction you're going to go.
Yeah.
And, stopping one particular venue or group. I mean, there have been many magicians over the years. Silly Billy is an example. Dan Garrett is another example,
mm-hmm.
That were kids magicians, family performers, corporate performers. I always decided to burn that bridge.
So and I didn't focus on one.
And focus on corporate, restaurant, cruise work. I've done everything from busking all the way up to heavy industrial.
Right. Well, I wouldn't necessarily, if I were you, discourage anybody, particularly in the formative years, if you would.
Well, no, in the formative years,
when you're trying to find your chi, find your way.
Yeah, exactly. And I just felt that it was one of those situations where, I didn't want to work family type shows,
uh-huh.
because it would get in the way of me doing the higher end shows.
Right.
So I made a decision. It was a business choice.
Right. Well, it was for me as well. I felt like where my time could better be spent, financially, that they're paying more per hour on a trade show than they are at a birthday party.
And I really have never worked by the hour. I've always worked by the event.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting thing.
And we can talk about that, especially in a strolling type situation.
So
cocktail party things.
Yeah,
like
because
that.
Strolling typically, well, maybe like an hour and 15 minutes or something. And I usually say, well, I've got a 2 hour minimum, but I kind of like what you're saying. Then if you just say by the event, so it's going to be $6.50 or whatever it's going to be for an event, they're going to say, well, it's only an hour and 15. But if you say 2 hours, they think we're going to get a discount by doing less.
Well, I never wanted to put in the mind of a client that, oh, can you work just an extra half an hour?
Yeah.
For the half that, whatever that fee was quoted per
Correct.
Hour. And if you think about it logically,
that makes sense.
It is, look, I have to get my, if I'm wearing a tux, I have to get my tux on. I have to drive. I have to get my props ready. So by working, you know, client's going to say, well, you know, the cocktail hour is only 45 minutes. I still have to do all that prep ready
right.
for it. So.
And it's hard to explain to a client.
Right.
What all you got to do? And it's like, okay, well, that's your worry, not mine.
Yeah.
I'm just
well,
here for 45 minutes.
You never, I feel you should never have to explain what your fee is
I don't
for.
Like that. Yeah,
so.
Right.
So I've just chosen, I always work by the event. It is so very rare for me to have multiple events in an evening. So I figured that I'm going to block my evening out
mm-hmm.
and that's it.
Even during the holidays when it's really busy?
The holidays are interesting. My fees are high enough
mm-hmm.
so that I can feel comfortable doing one per night.
Okay.
Again, my choice. That's my business plan. You know,
but even though you're not charging by the hour in your mind, Paul, are you thinking, okay, well, this is, they want 4 hours of walk around versus they only want 45 minutes. So in your mind, you're thinking, okay, well, I'm going to charge them this price because you're not charging the same 45 minutes as you are for 4 hours, I'm sure. Or are you?
Based on my expertise, I can always tell a client, no, you don't want me there for 4 hours. You want the event to be, you want the honoree to have the spotlight. I'm only there as an icebreaker. I'm only there to continue the party feeling.
Yeah.
So, you know, if a client says I've got, well, we have 40 people at our business event, there's no way I'm going to be there for 4 hours.
No.
And, you know, if you're direct and confident in what you do, mm-hmm. you tell a client, well, you know, you're going to have people showing up at 6 o'clock. Then you're going to have that group of people that show up at 6:30. So your cocktail hour is going to be like from 6 to 7:30. Now you want to have something to do for those clients or those guests that come in at 6 o'clock, but the main time is going to be that last hour.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, and you can also let a client know, you know, I'm going to work. I don't look at the clock. These are my lines. I don't look at the clock. Mm-hmm. I work until I feel everyone has had a great experience.
Oh, I like that. Sure.
So, you know, look, I've done this such a long time. I've done parties for one person.
Really?
And I've done parties where it's a hospitality suite where there's 500 people. So based on that, and the other thing that you and I have to know, I'm looking to the side, making sure no one's here to listen. Not everybody wants to see magic.
Right. That's true.
So
I know that's a fact.
You know, I have to understand the dynamics of a party. Sometimes people are there to do business. They don't want to be interrupted. Even though the host has hired me to perform for everybody in mm-hmm. finger quotes, mm-hmm. There are people that want to do business. There are people that are you know, they're reconnecting after a long period of time.
And that's what the whole thing is about to begin with. You're just kind of trying to break the ice. Well, they may have already broken the ice and they're now into their business discussions.
Over the years, I have one party that I remember that I did here in Hollywood. I walked in, set up, got ready, and these people had not seen each other for well over 20 years. Mm-hmm. They were more interested in talking with each other. I went up to my host and I said, you know, your people really don't need me. Mm-hmm. And they're very interested in reconnecting.
Right.
So I'm going to say, thank you very much. Shake your hand. I'm going to give you back your money. And I left.
That'd be like going to a high school reunion in which they're all friends. They're all getting back together. They don't need a magician to try to break that ice or do anything.
Who needs a magician? How dare you? Everybody needs a magician.
Yeah.
But there are just places where it's not going to work.
You touched on something there earlier that reminded me of a situation. I remember once when it was after they'd had their breakout meetings and everything, and they were getting ready for their social hour. And so I was supposed to be working again just before they go in and have dinner. And so as they were coming to the bar, then I was doing some entertaining people who are standing in line, or after they had their drinks, I do 2, 3, or 4 people as you normally would. And before long, they wouldn't leave. They were kind of watching, and then they got more and more. Long story short, I was doing basically a parlor show for 40 people in the middle of a big circle and all that. How do you avoid that? And how do you stop and say, I'm done, we're moving on to the next group, without actually saying that?
Well, I think that that's a mindset that, again, you are there as an icebreaker, or you're there to give people a memorable moment, something to talk about. Mm-hmm. It's almost like working a trade show situation in the sense that I finished my presentation. Now I'm going to turn you over to the booth personnel.
Right.
So in a social function, you do your final trick, whether or not you get applause or you get laughs or whatever, you thank the people for their attention.
Right.
And then you move. So
that's a way of doing it. I see what you mean. You actually just say, hey, thank you.
Yeah. And I think that, very funny story based on this. Bob Kohler and I were working a party, and it was for Mutual of Omaha, mm-hmm. an insurance company. We got to the venue. We got to the ballroom, And Bob and I decided, okay, I'll go to the left and you go to the right. We'll meet each other halfway in the back of the room. Mm-hmm. And as we were working, it was horrible. It was just, so we meet at the back of the room and both of us are looking at each other and we're going, what's wrong with these people? Hmm. And we looked at each other and we looked at the client. Oh, it's Mutual of Omaha. These people were from the Midwest,
correct.
Nebraska.
Right.
We were moving much too quickly. We were moving much too fast, trying to do magic for them.
Right.
Again, Bob is a true pro.
Yeah.
We needed to slow down. Mm-hmm. So instead of working in fifth gear, we said, okay, you go to the right, I'll go back to the left. And we met at the front. We slowed down. We just slowed down.
Yeah.
And it was like night and day. These people were laughing. They were enjoying themselves. They were slapping each other on the back, you know, high fives going up. And it was just by realizing that that audience wanted to be entertained, but not at our pace.
Right.
At their pace.
To know who the, so you got to know who your audience is.
Well, that's part of being a strolling guy, is being able to profile
right.
an audience as you're going to be working.
Right. Yeah. So, well, it's the same way, I think, when you work in restaurants, that you have, when you walk up to a table and you're going to be talking, whether you have a family or you have to recognize there are a couple of people having a business meeting and you don't want to interrupt that. I remember one time when I was working in a restaurant and there was a man and a woman talking. Apparently, they must have been having a serious conversation, because when I walked up, the lady was so thankful that I was there to break the action, and he was just the opposite. In fact, he got up and left and went to the bathroom.
Oh, my.
And then I did two or three things for her, and she was just laughing and applauding, having a great time. And then he came back and stood there and looked at me, and he threw down some cash, and it's kind of like, are you done? You know, take this and get out of here.
Exactly. Well, it could have been a first date.
It could be too.
Well, you know, working restaurants, I worked in one restaurant in Beverly Hills for over 25 years. And you meet these groups and you have to evaluate automatically. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you walk right by a group because you just don't get the vibe that they want to see anything.
Right.
And then you get the group that looks up at you and goes, when are you going to come and visit my table?
Right.
And it, just because you didn't get the vibe doesn't mean that they don't want to see you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that, and that's a skill that has developed over the years, obviously.
We were talking about kids' parties earlier then as well. I think one of the important things of working children's events, even if you decide later not to do it, is to not make that decision too early that I don't want to do this. I want to follow the money. I want to go work cruise ships, trade shows, whatever, you know, where the money is. You still, I think, need to develop those chops, because if you're working restaurants or you're in a cruise ship or wherever you are, there will be children there and you need to know how to interact with them and what kinds of tricks work for them versus adults.
Yes.
Because, okay. I'm sure you had that occasion.
Oh, of course. And my background, for those that don't know, I was a substitute teacher.
Oh, I didn't know that.
In the Los Angeles Unified School District. And I did that very specifically because I wanted to have the freedom to take 2 weeks off.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. But learning how to work, I was an elementary school sub. So learning how to work with all kinds of kids from kindergarten, and in my case, to sixth grade. Actually, I even worked in middle school. Gave me, and then also through high school, I worked at day camps and things like that. So I knew how to work with kids.
Right.
But I've always treated kids need to be treated with a softer glove, you know, softer hand. Even when they're teenagers and they think they know everything. Mm-hmm. Again, you have to meet them on their level. So sometimes you are down on your knees doing card tricks or whatever. And again, you know, my repertoire is really very, very extensive. Mm-hmm. So I have tricks that I would do for adults, but then I can kid friendly them as well.
Sure.
So,
sure.
Yeah.
think you're also going to be doing stand-up sometime. They're going to say, well, we're going to be, particularly holiday parties, we're having our children there also. So you can't just be doing things for the adults where the kids are not involved, because the parents like to watch the kids get involved.
Dan Garrett was one of those people that gave me advice through his lecture notes that you do if you're hired for a family party. There's also a period of time where all the adults are conversing in the back if they're not watching the show. And you do a little bit of strolling work for them. And
before the show begins.
Either before, after, okay. Not during. Obviously, yeah, you're focused on the family party. But you go to the adults and you go, you know, I also do adult cocktail parties. And this is the kind of magic that I do. So you're taking an opportunity to work for the crowd that you want to work for based on them being there. So again, the magic that we produce has to be of value and has to be entertaining for everyone.
One never knows. I'd like to go back to this classic story with Bill Goodman when he was working at a restaurant and there were some business clients and someone said, hey, we've got a trade show coming up. Have you ever worked them? And he goes, what's a trade show basically? And they told him, and he said, sure, I'll be available. And that launched his career of being a trade show.
I think that
you just don't know where it's coming from.
I think that's very important. That was one of the reasons I worked in the Beverly Hills restaurant. Mm-hmm. It was frequented by business people. Mm-hmm. And my first trade show hospitality suite was because they had seen me at at that restaurant.
Uh-huh.
So you're right. You never know where a show is going to come from. You never know.
It could just be an interaction while you're waiting in line in In-N-Out or something, you know.
In-N-Out? Oh, that's right. You guys from out of state like In-N-Out a lot.
I love In-N-Out. That's right. But my point is, wherever you are, you might just be having a conversation that may not even necessarily be where you're performing for them, but you start talking about magic and they say, well, you know, we had a magician at our thing, but he didn't turn out. We're looking for somebody different. Whatever it is.
Right.
It might be, you never know where this is your next opportunity can come from.
This is why one must conduct themselves professionally.
Exactly. All the time.
All the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can be like Joel Bauer and at 8 o'clock in the morning be wearing a Zillioni suit out on the tennis court.
Yeah.
And it's inappropriate for me. I wouldn't do that, but there are people that do that. So, yeah. You know, again, having an elevator speech. Yeah, what do you do? You know, this is what I do.
Right.
Having a business card, having whether it's QR code or whatever, it's the personal interactions that eventually will give you a job.
That's right.
So.
That's right. Speaking of that, that's something as far as the QR code and you know, of course, websites and everything that evolved so quickly because it used to be that you had to have a VHS promo tape. Before that, you didn't have that. It was just word of mouth. And a lot of times people would say, well, where can I come and see you? Obviously, if you're out here at the Magic Castle, that would be an ideal place. But for the rest of the world who doesn't have this opportunity, they may not have a place where people can go and see them. But if you have some video or something that...
I get asked for videos all the time. And I don't have one.
Okay.
And the reason that I give my clients is that everything that I do is for a specific client. And it's the
not
footage.
Appropriate.
Well, not inappropriate. I say it's proprietary. Hard word for me to say this early in the morning. Proprietary. Film that I do at a private party belongs to the private party giver. Oh,
good point.
It belongs to the trade show.
Yes.
If you'd like, I can show you what I do. And again, I'm an older guy. I don't like working just with email or text messages.
I like face to face.
The minimum for me is a phone call. Mm-hmm. You know, so that a client can get to know me by the way that I speak with them. Mm-hmm. And by doing that, I'm establishing a friendship. Much easier to deal with a friend rather than somebody whom I think of. As I was asked to do a trade show by a client that I had done trade shows for. Mm-hmm. He retired and then went on to another company. And he called me and wanted me to do a trade show for the new company.
Sure.
His feeling was that since I worked for him so many years ago, that I would be charging the same amount of money.
Why would they think that you buy a car at the same price?
a can of tuna doesn't go up.
Yeah.
And he was shocked that I would charge so much more after, in essence, basically, probably 10 years. Mm-hmm. But
you'd not had that relationship. You'd had a relationship, but you'd not worked every year for those 10 years.
No.
It was like that gap.
Right.
I understand.
And, again, he had retired. He was living his life. And then he decided that he was going to go back to work. He went back to work, brought me in. It didn't turn into anything.
Right.
Even though we had that personal relationship, mm-hmm. because he was remembering, he was one of the first trade shows that I had done. So the fee I was being paid at that time would not be anywhere what I was worth in my own mind mm-hmm. then.
Right.
So I lost to a race car simulator.
Okay.
And he still couldn't understand the difference between somebody sitting in the race car trying to drive quick to get a time as opposed to somebody that was going to establish, benefits and establishing friendships for that company. Mm-hmm. So it was fine.
Yeah. It's sometimes hard to explain to someone in that case, the company has used a magician, but I'm surprised though that didn't recognize that times have changed, prices have changed, and didn't recognize that. I was going to a company one time that wanted, there was a fellow who was sold on me to begin with, and he wanted to try, and he was actually a consultant, I guess, a marketing consultant. And so they pretty much did whatever this guy told them, except they'd never used a magician before. So they weren't too sure they wanted to have me. So he arranged for this meeting, and you could tell how the people had their arms crossed to begin with. But by the end, I mean, I talked about what I do and everything. And then I had some things prepared to perform for them. And they were laughing and everything. And I had also done a little prep time about the company so I could pitch what some of their things were. And I'd made a 3-card Monte with their company logo kind of thing. So that way they had something they could take home with them then as well. And then they were laughing, having a great time. And I said, I think you'll enjoy it. And then I opened up my portfolio and handed them a contract. You slid that across the table and said, that just sign that and we can kind of move on. But this guy who had originally, I already had the in with him, but with the rest of the people who had to go from uncrossing their arms to welcome me with a hug, like, yeah, this is great.
What do we need a court jester for at our booth?
Exactly right. Well, and beyond that, there was one company I had ultimately worked for who originally were put off thinking, we don't want to bait and switch. We don't want people doing card tricks because they think of that as being a con man and we're not in that kind of business. We're going to be here tomorrow. And it's like, okay, let's get over this right away.
Well, again, this is mindset and the definition of what you are as a trade show. The term is infotainer that is being used by a lot of guys, is the fact that you become part and parcel of the sales force mm-hmm. and that you're a representative of, and the biggest compliment that any of the trade show guys get is, how long have you been with the company?
The company? Right.
And you go, oh no, I'm a hired gun. And they go, well, you know more about the company than that guy overseeing.
I actually had a president tell me that at the company one time mm-hmm. in which he was saying, you know more about this than what my guy's doing here.
Well, this is called due diligence.
Yeah.
And you learn about your company, and that's actually step number two.
Mm-hmm.
Step number one is getting the phone call to those people that are going to be there.
Yeah.
So.
Have you ever thought about, or do you use a personal assistant? And I'm talking about something, they have those things online where you can get like My Man in India or something like that, where they can kind of do research.
I have never done that.
You know what I'm talking about though.
I understand it. Again, you're calling somebody who's a consultant that will get you that information.
Right.
I think it's easy enough with the internet now to get that.
True. No, you can get that. Yeah. But by giving it to them, letting them. Let's say, for an example, there is a venue that's a convention hall, and you can see online all the conventions for the next year and what companies then are going to be with each of those different types of conventions. But to contact all them, it takes a whole heck of a lot of time. And so let somebody else do that. That's what I'm saying.
Well, I you know, I've heard that other people do that. A lot of people do that for private party work as well. You know, oh, you have to talk to my agent, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And the agent is the person that sets the price and whatever. So that, that high price comes from an agent, not from you directly. A lot of people use their spouse or girlfriend or
right.
their boyfriend to do that. Under an assumed name.
A friend of mine was very successful in doing a lot of school shows, in which he had actually, it was a next door neighbor lady who wasn't his agent, but really kind of his bookkeeper and also kept his records and booked him, you know, helped him on the shows, et cetera, as far as back office goes. But when they would go to talk to principals, the two of them would go in. But when it came to money, then he would stand up, leave the room, and then she would talk about the money. So this way that she would say, oh, well, it's going to cost such and such. And so, well, I'm going to have to go back and talk to him. And that's a very professional way of doing it, I think.
I think so. It's not anything that I've ever done. My wife never wanted to be involved in the business aspect of doing what I was doing.
Yeah.
But there are people that did it and quite successful. Very well-known magician, nameless at this point, had a girlfriend, now his wife, and she would do all the cold calling. You know, I'm calling on behalf of Mr. X.
Right.
And this is what he can do for you.
Yeah.
Would you like to set up a meeting?
Yeah.
It was very successful. Very successful.
Yeah.
And now for a brief word from our sponsor. Coming up in Tacoma, Washington, the International Brotherhood of Magicians convention is going to be July the 10th through the 13th, and it is going to be an awesome convention. And I have with me right now a past international president and also a winner of the Gold Cups. Here he is, Oscar Munoz. Hey, Oscar.
Hey, Scott, how you doing, man?
I'm fantastic. I am also just pumped and excited about the convention that's coming up this summer. It's just coming up in just a very short time, just in a couple of weeks over here in July the 10th. So tell me a little bit about what's going on, why people should come.
Hey, we're going to have a party in Tacoma, Washington, man. It is going to be awesome. It's at the Marriott Tacoma downtown. We have an abundance of acts that have not been seen in a long time. We're honoring Michael Amar, and we got people from overseas coming out here to show their magic and their talents. It's going to be a great 4-day convention, and they're going to see people out there. We have some guests that are going to be walking around that you're going to recognize as the stars of magic.
Wow.
So for those of you that haven't registered, we have magician.org and ibmconvention.com. To go out and see the sites, register, and, you know, join us for the 4 days of great magic.
It sounds like a lot of fun. Sounds like it's going to, when I was looking at the website, the talent looks like it's amazing. The hotel located conveniently downtown, a lot of restaurants and everything to go to, and plenty of things to do.
Yeah, restaurants. You're talking about restaurants. One right across the way, it's all seafood. Take a left, there's Chinese food. Go down the strip a little bit, there's pizza. It's phenomenal. It's going to be great for everybody that lives out there.
And I know that, again, the talent that you're going to be bringing in, as you said, you're going to be having Michael Amar as the guest of honor, but then there'll be a lot of other people from all over the country coming in, the world.
And overseas, from the UK. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to, and we also are debuting Sean Farquhar's Lost in the Shuffle. We're going to have a movie night, which is awesome, with popcorn and all that good stuff.
That is an amazing thing, because that's going to be just a limited run thing that there are not many people who get to see that. I think there are just like six different places across the country, and you're one of them. That's great.
Right.
Well, Oscar, thank you very much. I think everybody is getting to the point where it's like, going to fish or cut bait. And just because it's going to be in a place where there's a lot of seafood, maybe they should be serious about that. Time to fish or cut bait, and time to register for the IBM convention. Go to magician.org or to ibmconvention.com, where they can get all the details and register right there. Thanks, Oscar.
Yes, sir. Thank you for the time. I appreciate you.
See you in Tacoma. And now back to our conversation with Paul Green.
Do you prefer hospitality suites, cocktail parties at trade shows, or actually working on the floor?
I like doing both. And interesting story. I was working a hospitality suite after a show on the floor. And couple of the people said, you know, they've got a magician in their booth and he was pretty good, but you're better. Hmm. And I looked at them and I said, guess who it was? So in the hospitality suite, I was in a tux.
Yeah.
On the floor, I was in a polo shirt being one of the company guys.
Right.
And they did not make the connection that it was just me.
You're better.
It's a long day.
Yeah.
By the way, it is a very long day.
Well, that's the darn thing about it. Putting in 8 hours to begin with on your feet there. And then you got to do another 4 hours or something up in the hotel room or wherever they're having a hospitality suite or something.
Biggest hint, take care of your feet.
You know, in that regard, I got a tip from a guy saying that you should wear deer stags. He was saying, my dad said, if you have $100, spend 99 of them on a good pair of shoes. And that's the thing. When you're working in there, it's to have that. And he was saying deer stags are fairly inexpensive that you can get. And then they have good soles. They are sharp looking as well. So
here's the line on shoes and working on your feet. Mm-hmm. Make sure that your client has padding underneath their carpet.
Correct.
Not only will it save you as a magician standing on your feet all day, but the attendees and the people that are at the booth personnel, they will appreciate it. Orthotics for your shoes.
Yeah.
Gel soles are the minimum. And here's the big hint on gel soles. Bring two pair.
Oh.
One pair goes in your shoes that you work on. Second pair goes in the refrigerator in your hotel room.
Hmm.
When you get back to your room, take the gel soles that have been on your feet the whole day out of your shoes. Put the chilled ones into your shoes. Put your feet up for 20 minutes. And if you can take an aspirin or an ibuprofen, keep your feet up for 20 minutes. And then the other thing is that shoe trees or pack your shoes with paper so that they are not only absorbent, but they're stretched out.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't want to put on shoes on swollen feet.
Well, that's a good point.
So little tips for, you know, little tips for the traveler.
Yeah, because you're going to be standing for so long. And another one is if you're going to be in a specific area within that booth, is you can buy these things that chefs use.
Yes.
That are mats, basically. And I've got one on, I've got a special booth that I've had made by a guy in Vegas. And so this mat goes on that thing and it's a lifesaver.
Save your life.
Yeah.
Save your life.
Yeah. It's little things like that, I think, are very important to people who don't work often enough, you know, they'll appreciate it.
Well, you know, Scott, you and I are road warriors. And, you know, when we're working on a show like that, we're traveling. And we have to take care of the little things. Randy Pryor has a great little booklet out, Tips for the Road Warrior. Wonderful, wonderful book. It's just filled with just great information. You know, and it's everything from, for example, if you wear a starched shirt that has collar stays.
Yeah.
You always lose your collar stays. What do you use instead? Q-tips.
Q-tips. I was going to say toothpicks, but Q-tips.
Q-tips.
Yeah.
They're in your hotel room.
Yeah.
Already.
Yeah.
You know, these are little things that you think of and little things that, that make the difference.
Yeah. What do you do if you have forgotten your cufflinks?
I have an interesting way of doing that. I actually roll my cuffs over my suit.
Okay.
So that they are up.
Right.
And then I give the suit a little twist.
Hmm.
And that prevents them from moving down. So I don't have something to replace my.
You say the suit, you mean your arm.
Yeah. On your suit.
You just give
it a little twist and it prevents it from moving down.
Huh.
Plus it has that finished look of having your sleeves rolled up.
Yeah.
Darwin Ortiz gave that information. He said, want to make your magic even stronger? Roll your sleeves up.
Because it makes you people think you've got nothing up your sleeve, kind of a thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Hmm.
So, what do you replace your
paper clips?
Paper clips are amazing things. You know, not only can they be used for cufflinks, but also tie bars and things like that. If you're wearing a long tie,
yeah.
So, you know, these little things, again, these are hints and tips that over the years that you've developed.
Yeah. I have forgotten those a few times, and it's very frustrating. And I just don't pull my cuffs out too far so they can see that. I mean, it does look bad, I think, but it does, keep it together. But I really love the idea of rolling it back over your sleeve like that. In working hospitality suites, that's actually an extra perk, or I should say an extra service that you can offer the client over there. How do you go about pricing that? If they
remember, I work by the event. I consider a trade show.
So the three-day event, you throw that in there with
that? That will be an additional thing that I would mention.
Okay.
It's not expected. If they ask me, my fee is high enough to cover everything.
Yes.
But, if they're willing to pay, that's fine. I don't want it to be a deal breaker though.
Yeah.
All right. So I put my 6.5 to 8 hours out on the floor, take an hour to an hour and a half in between, and then show up for hospitality. I may work an hour, maybe an hour and a half, unless the event is so special for them. I've done trade shows where by the show rules, they have to invite everybody that's at the trade show.
Yeah.
They cannot be selective. So you may have 500 people. You may have 1,000 people that show up.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm there, and the other thing is that if it is a large hospitality suite, I may book additional talent.
Well, that was my next question. How do you price that and tell them? Do you give them by the hour, or you give them an event price?
No, it's an event price.
For them as well.
Right.
So you're saying, I'm going to have this event and it may last an hour and a half, it may be 3 hours, but we're going to give you X dollars.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And the situation, let's say I was going to do a show in Houston. Now I'm in California, but they have a hospitality event where there's going to be 300 to 400 people.
Okay.
I obviously would love to have someone else along with me. Now, you live in Houston. They don't have to pay hotel. They don't have to pay airfare.
Right.
What I would do is I would call you up because I know you were in the Houston area.
Right.
And I'd say, hey, Scott, I've got a hospitality suite. What would you charge me?
Mm-hmm.
What is your normal fee? If it's too low, I'll jack it up. And the money goes to you. It doesn't go to me.
Okay.
It's an extra added thing. If it's too high, I may say to you, I don't think they're going to go that high.
Okay.
And then I leave it to you.
Yeah.
But it is a situation where to make the event work, I may have to have additional help. I'm only one guy.
I was talking with a fellow, now this was several years ago, who was doing trade shows and doing very well. I think he's kind of retired now, but he was saying that he had two guys who were working for him. And it seems like it was one of the guys who was telling me that it was like $400 that they were doing this each. So it's like $800. But then this guy who had hired them was getting $2,500. And, his reasoning was that, I'm working all day long, and so I don't want them to feel that I'm worth it. I don't want them to start doing the calculations by the hour and thinking, okay, well, if I broke this down, he's just working a couple of hours for $400, so how come we're paying him, $10,000 or whatever here for this day? So I need to kind of charge appropriately a higher price.
Well, I think that that's a good idea. Mm-hmm. Again, guys that work in restaurants that are working for tips. A guest throws you $20 at the end of your, at the end of your little performance and then gives you a call for a trade show.
Yeah.
And you're going to charge $2,500 for that day.
Right.
And the guy thinks back, well, I threw him $20 and he was really happy.
Exactly right. Yeah. And I remember talking with Charles Green about that several years ago, about the fact that he was saying that's why he didn't like to take tips because of that very reason. It's kind of like, well, he took this and I called him and it was going to be so many thousands of dollars. Like, that makes sense. So
here's the puzzle that we always have to play with. when a guest offers to give you a tip, that is them saying thank you.
Yes.
It is gauche. Mm-hmm. Look that word up. it is gauche to turn down a thank you.
Yeah.
So if you make it seem like, oh, that's very kind of you. Do me a favor. Tell the management that you've had a great time. Blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But the guy wants to still give you a tip.
Yeah.
You accept it graciously, in my opinion.
Okay. I'm going to hold you to those words, because what if you were in a hospitality suite and a client of your, the client you're working for, is saying, oh, my gosh, yeah, that's great. Here's $100 or something. Do you take it or?
No.
Okay.
I don't. In a corporate situation, yeah, it's wonderful to have people love you so much that they're going to give you that kind of money.
Yeah.
But I turn that around and I say, well, thank you very much, but I'm paid very well by Acme to be here and entertain you. How fortunate I am that our paths crossed.
But what if they say, but I, you know, I would like for you to take it because you, you know, you really rock my world. I mean, if
then you take
that the second time,
then you take it.
Okay.
Obviously.
But you got to tell them, I mean, I agree with you. You have to say, look, I'm being paid by the, your, this client. And so, thank you. You know, you're not saying I don't take it. You're just saying I'm being paid.
That's
already.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And again, you put it on the client. I have taken, I have been in this situation before where I've worked a party and I end up with $500 that people have pushed on me.
Yeah.
I will take that $500 and I will make a donation to a charity of their choice in their name.
Well, that's nice.
And I just, you know, I'm already being paid.
I was at an event like this one time in which I was performing in the round and, I did something for somebody and they said, that's great. Here's $20. Do another one. And I said, no, and the same thing. And I'm already being paid. And said, nope, I want you to have that. So second time, I said, okay, I'll take it. And then some other guys came around and said, what's going on over here? And he said, nope, this guy who gave me the $20 said, this guy's a magician. He's fantastic. But he said, you got to pay up to see him. And I said, you don't have to pay. And he said, yes, you do. And so before long, he had hundreds of dollars on the table over there. And then my client came by and he said, what's going on over here? He sees all this cash and thinks that I'm hitting on these guys, you know, and I was like, I feel horrible. And I said, look, they, then I explained what happened and he said, take them for all they're worth. Just take all their money. So he was with me, but I could have gone the wrong way.
Of course. Of course. You know, you always listen, you have to protect yourself and you have to protect your client.
Yeah.
And what's the feeling that you want to give a guest that's watched you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are you throwing three card money on the street, you know, playing the chain game, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, throwing money on the table. I'm not sure it's really something that, you know, most companies don't want to be seen as, you know, we have a huckster working for us. So
that's right. That's right.
You know, I'm always cognizant that, the people that I work for have given me the chance to work for them.
And when you're working with a client, do you have the same kind of pitch each year? I mean, from year to year, whenever that you're working with them, or do you renew that?
Oh, I renew everything.
Okay.
I may not change the tricks though.
Oh, really?
Because the tricks are this. I learned this from Eddie Tulloch. Tricks remain the same. What you say is different.
Okay. Because each year they've got something new that they're wanting to pitch or whatever.
So again, this is due diligence. To find out what are the buzzwords. I'm not a heavy pitch guy.
Mm-hmm.
I find out the buzzwords. I find out about the company. I may have a tagline that I use. You know, 4 to 6 buzzwords to make a potential client for the company stop and go, oh, you've got a solution for that? Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that. I didn't know Acme had that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're an attention getter and a centrist in the sense of you want the attention of the attendees. We're talking a lot about trade shows.
Right.
To pay attention to you and then step into your booth.
Mm-hmm.
So, these are, I will tell you that in my opinion that those people that are our buskers, street performers,
yeah,
are acquiring the skills that they will eventually turn into trade show infotainers.
Those two are very closely aligned, mm-hmm, because you have to stop people in the street in order to make them want to watch what you're doing, because what you have is more important than whatever they're doing at the moment.
Well, and not only that, is that you have to have the feeling and purport that what they are watching is something for talent.
Right.
And of value. If you don't value what you do,
right,
as a performer, your audience members, why do they even want to watch you
why
if there's no
care?
Value? Why right. do they care?
Uh-huh.
So, I think that's
the secret.
How do
you make people care? Do you select tricks based upon things that you can put your personality into or emotions?
I think that personality and emotions are the most important things. Tricks are secondary.
Right.
Tricks are secondary. Yeah, I'll give you a great example of this in terms of, you and I have probably come across lay people and, oh, George knows this great trick.
Right.
And George does this trick. It's the slap trick with the cards in between the knuckles.
Right.
I have not seen very many professionals using that trick.
Yeah.
But they watch George and George, oh my gosh, George, because they have no expectation.
Right.
Of George other than, look at that. It's really, you know, it's the old glide trick, you know, and he does it very, very badly, right, but he gets a reaction out of it because of the connection.
Uh-huh.
I, on the other hand, I will do the same trick, not in the same way, not using the slap to get over whatever. And they look at you as a magician and go, you're pretty good. Just yeah. my friend George's trick.
Though. Yeah. Well, a lot of times what I see, and you do, I'm sure as well, is the thing where they lay down the cards, you know, three different rows, look at a card, and then they gather them up, and then, okay, look and see if it's in this row again, kind of a thing. And that's the popular trick that I normally hear. And mm-hmm. John Rockerbomber had a variation on that. And I wish to this day that I could remember what it was, because it was awesome. It's kind of like, well, wait a minute, that is a pretty good trick. And then you start to replicate that. And then you kind of lay out the three rows. And then you say, so you just think of a card, right? And then they do. And then you gather up the rows. And so, and your card was the three of hearts, right? And they said, yeah, but you're supposed to lay them back down, you know. But the funny thing is the rest of the audience go, wait a minute.
Milt Court had the same kind of situation, and I'll tell you how I handle it. Mm. I will have them take a card, and I will surreptitiously make them take the card I want to.
Yeah.
I will not say I force them to take a card. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, this is a magic podcast. Yeah. I force the card on them. And then I, you know, let me show you this trick I learned when I was a kid, and you lay down the cards in the three rows and you go, oh, by the way, is there a reason you took the five of spades and you gather up the 21 cards and right. you go on your way and right. they go, what just happened? And if your forcing method is decent, even the magicians will look at you and go, how the hell did they do that?
Yeah, if you've done that properly, that's true. Well, we have been talking a lot about trade shows, but then also as far as, you know, being a corporate magician and doing other kinds of a thing in the corporate market, that you have been identified really of being the corporate magician. And I like also branding is important. You with obviously with your name of Green, mm-hmm. everything is green, your cards are green and everything else then as well. So this way, do you find that that's been very helpful? I assume
very much so. But then I asked the question of you, Scott Wells, is there a color Wells?
No, but there
are. You can't do it then.
No. No, but I think that you could find something that is going to be your brand of whatever that happens to be.
Oh my gosh. A wishing well. Scott Wishing Well.
That's true. That's true. In fact, I remember when I was working at the castle so many years ago in the close-up room, and Don Lawton was the host. And my wife, Kathy, was in the audience, and she said, well, I see Mrs. Wells in the audience. And he says, are there any other little wells back at home, like a geyser and wishing wells? And
poor us for having to deal with all those puns.
That is true. In going to booking the corporate shows, mm-hmm. how would you say that you would go about that? Do you are you soliciting? Do you solicit your companies you worked for before? Keep those in, keep in contact with them, and then follow up with them. And
when I'm working with a corporate client, Scott, I establish a relationship. I have clients that I've had for over 40 years.
Yeah.
And that's pretty incredible.
40 years.
Sorry. No. Yeah. Some have only been 4 years. Yeah. Some have been one show. again, I'm establishing relationships with my clients. And I think that it's important that you realize that as you establish yourself, to providing the service that you say that you're going to do.
Yeah.
And then giving them 110% of it, 120% of it. This is what I can do. Oh my gosh, look at what you've done.
Yeah.
That you establish relationships like that. So you go back to your, you go back to your clients that you've worked for. You can also ask your clients if they could refer you to other people that are corporate partners. And then again, the idea of having a business card with you, an elevator pitch, whatever, to establish that this is a service that you can provide. You know, I worked for a company. I was invited to their holiday party, and it was a wonderful holiday party in December. And they had a magician at the party. And I went over to my trade show boss. I said, why did you hire, this so-and-so, guy?
Yeah.
And they said, well, he's our holiday party magician. You're our trade show magician.
Oh, interesting.
So they saw a difference between the party guy.
Right.
Even though I could have done, you know, whatever the guy was doing, whatever. But establishing, you've got to find the person that makes the decisions. These are all the things that are typically said. You know, on a new client, you've got to find the guy that's made that decision. You talked about the guy that was sold on you, but then he had to have a meeting with the decision makers.
Right, correct.
So it's the same thing in any show that you're going to do. You've got to sell the parent for that party for the birthday.
Right.
You've got to sell the head of marketing. You've got to sell the trade show exhibit manager. You may have to sell the president, CEO of a company. And I've had all of those situations.
Right.
You've got to find the person that says yes.
More and more people are doing, I'm sure, Zoom types of interviews, because it used to be that we would be doing one-on-one type of personal visits, you know.
Well, that's, you know, the technology is such that you can do a Zoom call now with a client. I don't like that. Again, I like, you know, real face-to-face. But there are people that do, and that's fine. Actually, in the old days, if a client called me and said that they wanted to see me, I'd get on a plane.
Sure.
And I'd go to their corporate headquarters. I would talk to them directly. And if I ended up doing the show for them, that was part and parcel of my fee. Mm-hmm. If I ended up not doing a show for them, I billed them for travel.
Oh, that's interesting.
So again, this is the way I work.
Works for you. May or may not work for somebody else.
Right. Exactly.
Then. You said something a little bit earlier that made me think about charity shows. How do you deal with that whenever someone is saying, well, there'll be a lot of clients there and you can get a lot of good exposure?
Well, you know, you can't eat exposure. That's the
you can die from exposure.
Yeah. I mean, that, you know, these are things, but if no one at that function is being paid, everyone is donating.
Yeah. Including
that includes the room, the food, the wait staff. Everyone that is getting a paycheck.
Right.
Why are you asking me to donate my time, my value? You have enough money to pay for the rental of your room and the food and everything like that. Yet you expect me to be able to do something. Want to pause?
Is that a question though that you ask them?
Yes, I do.
Are you paying anybody else?
I do.
Okay.
I do. And then my charity work is by choice.
Yeah.
If it's a charity that I represent.
You believe in.
That I believe in. I will definitely give them my time. I'm doing a show for the Magic Castle outreach, the AMA outreach,
right,
for the USO.
Right.
And I believe in that.
Sure.
So I have a gift. Let me share that gift. I may not have $1,000 to give them or $100 to give them or whatever as a donation, but I can certainly share my gift and let them know that I care about the function.
Well, I've had other times in which I've said that if you can find a donor who would pay my fee.
Right. And be a sponsor.
Be a sponsor. Basically.
Yes. That's a really very good way of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this works for me. I don't know if it works for anybody else, but this is my feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, it's just that it happens to be kind of a thorny issue for a lot of people who are called all the time saying, hey, we got this charity thing coming up. And
well, let's make it a plus for them. Here's a way that you can sort of play this game. Certainly I would love to work for you. Would you do me a favor? In exchange, I'd like you to give me your email list.
Yeah.
Would you have your corporate photographer? Would you have he or she follow me around and take pictures that I may then use for my own publicity? Will you, as a corporate president sponsor, would you do me a favor and write me a testimonial letter?
Right.
Would you refer me to three clients that think they might want to use my services for fee?
Right.
So you're getting something out of it.
Yeah.
And I think that that's very important. Again, you got to value what you do.
That's right.
If you don't value what you do, it's, you know.
But I've had that in the past in which I've said, well, I would like to have, because they're saying there'll be a lot of people there who are going to get other kinds of jobs. Okay, mm-hmm. Well, can you tell me who they might be?
Yeah.
And getting their email, and more importantly, can I need to get a letter then from you? And can you guarantee me a letter of recommendation from these other people? And they will say, well, sure, and then nothing ever comes of it. That's very disappointing.
Testimonial letters are often written by the individual. I will write it and they will sign it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, of course you put it on their desk and say, is this something that you can get behind?
Years ago when, I used to be able to send out those brochures and all kinds of things, there was one fellow who had these testimonial letters and this like from whatever the company was of Johnson Johnson or something, it'd be on their letterhead. And they'd say, well, you want these things returned because they look like they were originals. He said, no, I get them all the time. And so what he had done is when he had requested the testimonial, he said, can I have some more stationery? And I'm just going to print this out on other stationery, on your stationery. But so it looked like an original.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So, but really don't use that anymore. Now the testimonials are all on the website.
Right.
Which goes back to the branding thing, what I was talking about, you know, you were saying the QR codes and the business cards and everything. Do you find the business cards are actually still important today?
I do.
Okay.
I do. Now, of course, my business cards are very unusual. My business cards are my greenback playing cards.
Oh, that's true.
So it's part of my branding.
Your brand. That's true.
The thinking is whether it's a promotional product or whatever, it needs to be unique such that it's going to be used, kept, and their attention is going to be drawn to it.
Right.
So my playing card, business card, plays very well for me.
One of the things I use now is called Dot. Mm-hmm. It's a Dot card. So this way that they can scan or they can tap their phone with the NFC. And that way it has all my contact info.
And my feeling about that is that they very rarely go back to their phone to get that information.
Oh, really? Okay.
You know, look, a website is a glorified brochure.
That's correct.
And I, for years, was reticent to have a website.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you'd like to go and see what I develop, paulgreenmagic.com.
Yeah.
And you can see my electronic brochure.
Yeah.
There's very little video on it. That would be the one thing that I would do to improve it.
Mm-hmm.
But it wouldn't be a sizzle reel. Mm. It would be an example reel of something. Sizzle reels, I think, you know, we're picking and choosing the best of the best.
Sure, of course. No. You'd actually have like a whole 5 or 10 minute routine or something you perform.
Well, I would never do it that long.
Okay, well, it should be 3 minutes.
I've even less than that.
Okay.
Look, the strongest card trick, in my opinion, that you can do is to show them a card and then have a change, whether it's in their hand or in your hand. That is, and there is a 40-second, it was after a very, very long hospitality function.
Yeah.
And these people wanted to see one more trick, and I was tired, and I didn't want to. So, you know, had them take a card and then change, and it was done.
Yeah.
You know, the reaction of the three people that were watching was great, so I put it on the website.
Had a similar thing in which they had a great time and everything. One more thing, and I did psychokinetic touches.
Mm-hmm.
And they had written me afterwards saying, of all the things, that was just the most amazing.
Right.
You don't know what
this is. This is why when we perform as a presentation, that we are reaching across and we are touching their heart.
Yeah.
We make a difference, whether it's for 10 seconds or whether it's for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Or for the rest of their lives.
Well, very well said. In fact, had a lot of things that you said very well throughout this last hour over here. So I want to wrap up. The name of my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast. And I always like to ask, what is it that is your phrase? What's your philosophy of life?
My philosophy is enjoy the search.
Okay.
And that stems from when I select a new routine or something different, I will research it. Again, due diligence.
Yeah.
Of looking at what has come beforehand and then cherry picking the best out of each of those things.
Yeah.
And then making it my own, remembering that it's not the trick. It's the personality and the humanity and the connection that we make as people with other people.
Very good. I like it. Thanks very much, Paul. It's always good talking with you, and I'm glad we had a little in-depth conversation.
Oh, Scott, it's been my pleasure. We've known each other for such a long time.
And, right. I've always admired you.
And, well, that's misplaced, but I appreciate it. And, you know, if you want to learn how to force a card, contact me.
And then get hold of me at paulgreen.com.
That's right. paulgreenmagic.com.
So with the Magic Word Podcast. That was Paul Green. Scotty out.
Oh, wait a minute, Scott. May I say that, please?
Yeah.
For the Magic Word Podcast, Scotty out.
I want to thank my good friend Paul Green for being my guest there this week, and I know you guys got a lot out of that. So many great tips and things. There was just a gold mine of information that was there. So thanks again, Paul, for sharing your experiences and your ideas and tips. That was really great. A couple things I do want to point out about this. This was not the best of recording conditions in the background. I tried to eliminate as much as I could as we were trying to find a room at the Magic Castle someplace where it would be quiet. It was absolutely impossible. We ended up having to record this in the break room. And so there was just a little bit of noise in the background. Hopefully it's been kept to a minimum that was not too evasive nor too bothersome for you listeners as you were tuning in here this week. Also, I mentioned about one of the tips from a friend of mine who had said it's a good idea to buy some deer stag shoes, which are very comfortable. His name is Eric Henning, who is a great magician out in the Washington, D.C. area, and he has a wonderful set of lecture notes called Tips, T-I-P-S, and it is just chock full of all kinds of ideas, one of which was that tip which I just gave you that was passed on from him about making sure that you have a good pair of shoes. Anyhow, thanks, Eric, for that suggestion. Well, I think it's about time for us to announce the winners for this week's contest. And again, I want to thank those who had actually subscribed to the pod letter and opened and read the contents. So that's way that you knew there was a contest going on. And then you went to the website, made that little bit of an extra effort to register and enter the contest. And the winners are Ken Schwab and Kent Cummins. Congratulations, guys. Thanks again for entering the contest, and I will send you that link for the Audible book, which you'll get a code for Spotify where you can download and listen to the book, The Magical Life of Marshall Brodeen by John Mooring. So thanks again for entering the contest and for reading the pod letter. Those of you who don't subscribe, I encourage you, if you would please, just go to themagicwordpodcast.com. There you'll see a place where that you can subscribe. There should be a little pop-up that'll say, join our pod letter. And it doesn't take much. Just put your name and email address and you'll get it there each week. And also, if you've got just a little bit of extra time, it'd be great if you can go to iTunes or wherever that you listen to your podcast and give us a 5-star rating along with some little comment of some positive comment. We would appreciate that. It helps our podcast to grow. So until next week, stay well, get booked. And remember that it's not the trick, it's the personality, the humanity, and the connections that we make with other people. This is Scotty out.